This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 5, Episode 7, The New Rules of Batting. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we look at the missing two-thirds of batting coaching, we talk about a 10-year-old bowler who really wants to bowl leg spin but he can't, and we help a coach help his spinners get better. All that and more coming up on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. It's time again for the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Your wait is over and you're going to have some cricket coaching and cricket playing goodness coming straight to you for the next half an hour or so. My name is David Hinchliffe and I'm in charge of things, and joining me this week we've got a couple of cricket coaching experts. First of all, the dulcet tones with a brand new microphone, it's Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School, Mark Garraway. Welcome, Garris.
Yes, with this lovely new bass line that we've got, I'm having to whisper rather than shout now, which is good.
Well, I can only say that, Garris, with your new microphone, you're definitely going to be taking Burner's pace as ladies' choice on the show. Also joining me, also a ladies' choice, it's Sam Lavery. Welcome to the show, Lavers.
Morning, David. I feel a little bit left out without the microphone now, in all honesty.
Yeah, well, you do. Your voice sounds weak and terrible, so sorry about that. So you're just going to have to put up with it. Okay, let's get on to the cricket instead of the mutual backslapping that's going on. And one thing I wanted to talk about this week was batting coaching, because Gareth, in the last couple of articles you've done has included some interesting discussion on the missing two-thirds of batting coaching, I think was the headline that we talked about. Of course, traditionally, when we've talked about coaching batting, we thought about technique, or the way you put it, shot execution, which is kind of a similar thing. There are other areas as well, as the mechanics of the shot. There's the picking up the visual cues, and there's deciding what shot to play. So that got me to thinking, those two elements there, are they under-considered when we're teaching batting to people, especially younger batsmen who are just learning the game, and maybe they're in a group setting, or maybe they're in a net setting, and we focus on technique, high elbow and all that kind of thing. Do we forget about those things? Should we focus on those things more, and should there be a more concentration on those things? So, Garris, where do you come from that side?
Well, obviously, technique is a really important part of batting. And I think rather than changing the way that players play, I think the articles that I wrote about picking length is more about what we do as coaches to facilitate the development of those particular skills, being able to watch the ball out of the hand, being able to predict where it's going to bounce on the pitch, and being able to anticipate where you make contact with it is more about what the coach does as a stimulus to develop those skills in the player. So the player really is going to be completely unaware of that, yeah. But you're going to be building the capacity through a different range of skills rather than traditional bowling machines, for example, which limit the opportunity for somebody to develop those skills which are vital within batting. So technique is really important, but I think one of the things about technique nowadays is we're getting better at seeing that there isn't one mode of technique which works in batting, and we only have to watch two batters bat in a test match or an ODI to realise that actually there's often massive differences. So, you know, going back to the time where I was involved with the England team, we used to have Alistair Cook and Andrew Strauss opening the batting, and both of them moved in completely different ways. So that's really important for us to start to pick out the individual technical points which will affect most change or most positive results in that individual person. And I think we're getting better at that, and over the next years I anticipate that we'll get significantly better at that. But in terms of the question about picking length, and being able to read where the ball is going to be bouncing, that's more for the coach to take on board in the way that they design their practices rather than the player to be aware of that.
And Lavers, that's something that you really need to customise towards who you're working with. If you're working with one-to-one with very talented players, you're going to do things in a slightly different way to if you're working with a group of under-13s who are in a group coaching situation.
Yeah, definitely. You've always got to try and manage your outcome towards the group that you're working with. So if there is a large group that you're working with, it's obviously a very different situation. So you maybe can't be quite as specific in what you're trying to achieve with the group there. But there's still ways you can work on it. And I definitely agree that teaching the identification of length and picking up a ball from the hand is something that's probably not considered. And I remember that Mark a couple of weeks ago spoke about different scoring systems in net, Gareth, if you remember, where we were talking about scoring through contact and quality rather than scoring through distance or where you've hit the ball, etc. And one of the things we try and do at school sometimes is we work around a perceived good length, a little bit fuller or a little bit shorter, and they bat as normal, but their scoring comes from making the right decisions in terms of moving backwards or moving forwards. So yes, they might hit all of them before, or they might miss all the balls. It doesn't really matter too much, but their score at the end of every set of 12 or 15 or whatever it might be is based on how well they've identified which way they should be moving, whether it's forwards or backwards. So that's simple things like that can be taken into a group scenario as well as done in a one-to-one. So there's always ways of employing things into group sessions. It just does take a little bit more thought and probably a little bit more explanation, because with a younger group and a bigger group, it's maybe not quite so easy for them to understand the importance of something like that.
And Gareth, thinking about helping players improve their decision-making, you posted a really good article about helping players improve their decision-making, but that seemed to be a little bit more focused towards working with small groups of players or working one-to-one with players. How would you help a group of players improve their decision-making when they're learning the game?
Well, the first thing I'd do is I'd stand back, I'd set a practice up, and I'd stand back and watch them. So that could even be, if we take it down to the junior levels, that could even be a game of quick cricket or a game of non-stop cricket, and just watch the way that they stand and they move, and start to work out how we can put them into different postures, which would allow their decision-making and initially their vision to be more acute, and that would be the first way that I'd do it. So for example, if I saw somebody who was batting with a very upright stance, who was making contact with the ball very, very late, then I would encourage them to have a go at either watching the bowler or the feeder of the ball and trying to pick up some cues from them in their body as to what length or what speed that they're going to bowl at, and then I'll get them to try and narrow down and maybe look at, if you're looking bowling with a tennis ball for example, to look at one of the seams on the tennis ball and see which one felt more natural with them, and whichever one it is likely to be their preference, and to get them to bat in their preference of looking at the ball either with a narrow vision or a broader vision, even within that context of under 11s, and that's really important to give them the opportunity of having both and to try those out. And by having their preferred visual way of looking at the ball will allow them to access that information that they're taking in through their eyes and make swifter decisions. That's the way that the body works. So that would be the first thing that I do. And you can do that in a one-to-one session, which we work in a lot of the time. But also you can do that just by watching and observing somebody and asking them to try both modes in a quick cricket game, and then work with a number of players in the space of 30 minutes doing exactly that. They'll come up with their own answers because they'll feel which one is more a preferred thing and which one felt a bit more clunky.
So what we're saying is it's a toolkit that rather than focusing on any one of those three elements, you look at all of those three elements and then focus in on the area where you feel that somebody needs to work on the most, and try and flip between those three rather than saying with the traditional model of saying let's focus on technique and let the other stuff worry about itself.
Well, they're very interlinked, David, and you know what I talk about preferences a lot. I think it's massively important. So, you know, if we were to do preferences with you, for example, example, okay, we would ask questions around, do you prefer things to be structural, do you prefer things to be spontaneous? And I think, having worked with you for a number of years now, one of your assets and one of your go-tos is having an organization, whether it be times, whether it be the scripts that we work to, whether it be the programs that we adhere, they're very, very well structured, and that is your preference. And everybody has a preference in structure and organization, but they also have a preference in vision as well. And if we give people the opportunity to experience both, you'll know often by the facial expressions of the person that's doing it whether their broader vision or their narrow vision is theirs preferred. You'll notice by the way that they move, one being more efficient and one being less efficient. You'll notice by the quality of their decision making, but more importantly, they'll notice it because they'll feel those differences. And you can do that with big groups, you can do that with one-to-ones. It's something that I think is a really valuable piece of coaching.
Okay, well, Gareth, yes, you know how well organized I am, and according to the script and also the couple of rehearsals that we've already had, it's time to move into the yes-no round. Three questions that are asked every week, and we can only answer yes or no, no matter how much more that we want to say. So, when you're ready, chaps, you can do the yesing and the knowing, and I can do the reading of the questions. First question: pink cricket balls are inevitable.
Yes.
Yes.
Second question: learn attack before defence.
Yes.
Yes.
Third question: wicket-keeping methods have changed dramatically in the last 10 years.
Yes.
No.
Now it's time for Berners' roving report, but every week Berners is traversing the world on our behalf, finding people to chat to and ask questions around cricket coaching and cricket playing. So Berners has travelled thousands and thousands of miles for this kind of thing. And this week, I think he's about 100 miles down the road from me. So not the furthest in terms of distance, but maybe the best in terms of interest. Berners, over to you.
I'm down at Gloucestershire County Ground today with the Gloucestershire cricket boys during their pre-season. I'm joined here with Mark Thorburn, who's one of their performance analysts. Mark, tell us a bit about your role at the cricket club here.
Okay, well, as you mentioned, I'm a performance analyst, and most recently just sort of started taking a looking after the bowlers here. And so, see, with your demonstrations, they ties in quite nicely with my two interests and obviously two areas of responsibility here.
So do you use a bit of technology software in what you do, I take it, on a game day and also in training?
We do. We as with all our analysts in the county game, we use obviously Feedback Cricket to collect our data, and then within our training environment, use a few different things just to collect some information on the guys and how they're going and try and record their progress.
Yep, and we're at a pre-season kind of training session here. What are the main things you're working on from a bowling side of things with the boys during these sessions?
Yeah, we're just looking at just very basic disciplines at the moment. Very easy for guys inside to kind of get quite carried away in terms of sort of bowling back of a length, and so just working on the discipline of just getting out fuller for when we get outside. And just looking, just simply attacking that sort of fourth stump around that area. So quite a simple plan at this stage with our four-day stuff and then one-day stuff, as I'm sure everyone does, looking at Yorkers, variations, all the rest of it.
So. Yeah, and a few of the boys had a little bowl on pitch vision here this morning. What were your thoughts on that and how it could kind of aid them, help them in this situation here, in this environment?
Absolutely. Well, they got had a number of our guys have a bowl on that. And instantly, I think just the interest levels and engagement went through the roof with them wanting to find out about how the ball's coming out, the end result, but also looking at the video feeds that they can get from that and sort of understanding the relationship between what they're doing within their actions and the outcome. And it just made it far more focused and purposeful. Would be the two areas, I think, as the biggest impact.
Great. And thoughts for the season? Gloucestershire going to be up there challenging?
Absolutely. We've got a very young bowling group. developing bowling group. And so here we're at a stage where we're optimistic about what we can do, but we've got to be realistic as well. And just try and learn from every opportunity, every time we bowl, go out there and bowl, try and learn from that, reflect from that and move forward. So I think that something like this with a pitch vision allows us to do that, allows us to set some realistic targets for us, and not be too unrealistic in terms of what guys can achieve and where they're at the moment. So that's where the benefit of this system I can see helping us definitely.
Brilliant. Well, thanks for your time and all the best for the season.
Thank you. Cheers.
Cheers, mate.
Thank you very much, Bernard, and speak to you again soon. Let's hop into the mailbag now. A couple of questions. And the best question of the week wins a prize, which is an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy and pitchvision.com. And if you're thinking about sending a question yourself and you're wondering where to send that to, then try coach@pitchvision.com. That's our email address, and it's always open for new questions. We have other ways of getting in touch with us, and we'll talk about those towards the end of the show. But for now, let's head into Usman's question. And Usman says, I'm 10 years old, and I really want a bowl spin. A coach from a coaching clinic said I have talent as a spin bowler, but my club coach won't let me bowl spin, and if I bowl spin, he'll bat me at number 11. I've had this coach for one season already, and I've signed up to play again, so I still have to play a whole season with him as coach. Please help me. It's a dilemma, chaps. What can we do for him?
Well, first of all, it's brilliant that a young boy of 10 has sort of taken responsibility for this, and he's looking to fix something himself. So fantastic that he's the person who's identified the issue and he's the one who's willing to deal with it. At any age, I think dealing with mixed messages from coaches is really tough. But as a 10-year-old, it must be even harder. So it's fantastic that he's willing to try and approach the subject himself anyway. So big well done for that in the first place. From that, obviously, we're in a sticky situation where we've got two people with a differing opinion. Communication channels seem to be a little bit disjointed. So I think one of the things that would be great to do, as is often the case, is let's just try and see if we can get three people in the room at the same time, which is the young man and his two coaches. So we can have a discussion about why one thinks his abilities aren't appropriate to bowling spin in a game, and the other thinks they are. So to start with, it'd be great to sit them down and have a discussion about why that is. Ultimately, if that's the way he wants to bowl, I'd always encourage someone, especially at that age when they're 10, 11, 12 and beyond, really, to do what you want to do. And if you want to bowl spin, then you want to bowl spin. And if someone's discouraging you or telling you that they'll bat you 11 because of that, you don't really want to have to move beyond the channels of immediate communication to your coach, but you want to try and get some sort of support from within the club or wherever it might be to say, actually, well, this guy's good at what he's doing and this is what he wants to do, and he's 10 years old, so at 10 years old you do what you want to do. That should be the way it is. So maybe he could be looked after a little bit more along the way. But my primary objective would be get three people sat in the room. Let's talk about it. Let's work out the positives and the negatives. It may be one person's got a great bit of information which will change someone else's opinion. So a bit more improvement in the communication channels, I think.
Yeah, there's a lot that we don't know here, isn't there, Gareth? So we've got to make some assumptions. But where are you coming from?
Well, I'd be completely on side with Sam. I think we had a similar question to this a number of weeks ago, where what Sam's talking about effectively is a case conference approach where you get everybody in the room and people talk about the player with the player and ultimately come up with a decision-making process which is based around the player. So it's a very player-centred approach. So I'm completely on side with what Sam's just come in. I'd probably say that I would add a couple of people to that group, because often you need somebody to chair that group, and it needs to be somebody who's relatively independent. So that could be, for example, an uncle or it could be a teacher from school, or it could be a trusted friend of the family to come in and act as the chair of that meeting, not necessarily to offer any opinions, but to make sure that the discussions are fair, that the child has the opportunity to speak, because it wouldn't be an easy situation for a 10-year-old to maybe present their views in the way that they'd like to. And it might also be an idea to get the dad in there as well, to be able to articulate things, maybe in a way from the family perspective, which isn't in 10-year-old speak or 10-year-old cognitive processes. So I'm completely on side with Sam. I'd probably add a couple of people to it just to make sure that the meeting stays very player-centric rather than getting into the realms of the adults getting what they want out of it.
Now, what if that is something that's not possible? Perhaps that coaching clinic coach is long gone. It was something that he mentioned in passing, and he probably can't even remember the player. What happens then?
Well, I think you'd obviously do without that particular coach, because they wouldn't be connected enough to be able to make a massive impact on it. But I think this conversation should still come into play. That the thing that I quite like is the fact that there's obviously a passion there for spin bowling, isn't there?
Oh, massive!
And that needs to be. Displayed and maybe presented to the wider group, because it could be that the other coach is completely unaware of that passion. It might be that Usman's not able to display that passion in the environments that he's in. So I'd still have the meeting. I'm with Sam completely on this. These things are always better open and honest and shared. And that would be a fantastic situation to get to, whether all of the coaches are in the room or just one of them's in the room. I think it would be valuable.
Yeah, but that's the only way, really. Otherwise, it becomes hearsay, doesn't it? It becomes, you know, he said this, I said that, and suddenly the point that everybody is trying to make gets lost in the Chinese whispers that go on with these things. And it can be a lot easier just to talk directly to someone and say, well, here's what I think. Well, actually, he's a tearaway fast bowler and he's a terrible batsman. Might answer the question straight away. But yeah, that passion for especially leg spin, we love leg spin on this show, so anything that can encourage another leg spinner is good by us, isn't it?
Certainly is.
Absolutely.
Let's move on to the next question, it's from a coach this time, and it's related to spin again, and I'm sure it's something we've all seen from time to time. I use your tips for the boys I coach, thank you very much. Have you any advice on getting more spin? I have one boy who turns at yards, whereas others struggle.
Yeah, I mean, it can be a huge amount of things, really. But often the angle of the approach could be something that is preventing a bowler from spinning it. So they could either be too straight in their approach, or equally could be too angled in the approach, which would mean that the body rotations would be merely trying to get the ball back online rather than being able to generate momentum up the kinetic chain and ultimately into the fingers and into the ball. So that's the first start I'd look at, would always be the run up to see whether the angle is facilitating the body to be able to produce spin, or whether it would be negating it. So that would be my first point. Then you can look at the angle that the feet are landing on the crease. And review that very much with a similar set of eyes on it. Is it facilitating or is it negating? And then finally, have a look at the grip that's on the ball, and also the contact points. And I know not everybody has 140 frame per second cameras, but they are incredibly cheap, as we've often talked about on the show. But you get a really good, if you have a look at the release positions and really zoom in on that, you get a fantastic bit of feedback that our eyes simply can't muster. And we'll see what fingers are making what contact, what the angle of the seam is, what the rotations on the seam are, how the ball is striking the pitch. And then the final thing is to look at pace, because each pitch has a optimum pace for spin, and as we've talked about again on this show previously, generally when the pitches are softer, the ball needs to be bowled at more pace, so it digs down into the pitch, stays on it longer, so it imparts spin. And then if it's a drier and dustier pitch, then the ball needs to go with probably a slower pace and more flight, so it lands on the pitch and stays on there for a period of time on the top surface before being able to impart its rotations to make the ball break. So I would always start with the run up, then have a look at the angle of the feet, then move my way up into how the ball's released, and then track the ball through the air before making any decisions on that. So that's my process, and I'm sure that Sam's got one that's slightly different that can add even more value.
Of course, there's the fact that some people turn the ball more than others, and if you've got one kid who's turning it square, that's really good, and if you've got other kids who aren't turning it square, maybe it's not fair to compare one player to another. Have you had much success, Lavers, with a player who doesn't turn it much, and then they've sort of turned the corner, and then they can turn it around corners?
Yeah, I think most of what Gareth has said is actually pretty much spot on. With on a number of occasions, I've gone through work with individuals who've had the issue of bowling spin and not turning it. Ultimately, as Gareth said, if you can have a look at the release point there with a half decent camera, you can generally find out what's going wrong. Now, it's usually going to come down to either the pace of delivery, the number of revolutions on the ball, or the direction of the revolutions on the ball. And for me, the most common one is usually the direction of the revolutions on the ball, where you're either bowling overspin as a wrist spinner, which a lot of wrist spinners will just bowl direct topspin, or as a finger spinner. A lot of young finger spinners who maybe haven't got big enough hands to get around the back of the ball, as it were, end up bowling backspin a lot. And even though they have sideways revolutions on the ball, bowling backspin a lot of the time won't grip the surface. And as a result of that, they won't get the purchase and they won't get the turn. From there, I'm looking towards how we can change that. So first of all, with the wrist spinner, why they're bowling topspin. Now, a lot of the time, topspin delivery comes from falling away slightly and then going over the top of the ball rather than being balanced and being able to spin across it. So I'm looking at run-up position and landing position. Something that Gareth mentioned earlier on. Whereas with a finger spinner who may be bowling backspin as opposed to getting those forward revolutions on the ball with the side spin, because we need both a lot of the time, I'd be looking again at position of their feet and ultimately the position of their body and hand at release. Again, being closed off and having too much of an angle on the way in can cause you to cut under the ball, rather than being in a position where you're balanced and you're aligned towards your target, which then allows you to rotate more and get over the top of the ball. And from there, you can actually generate that forward rotation on the ball, which will help you with the grip when it comes to landing and then ultimately turning. So a few different things to look at. But as Gareth said, if you identify some specifics, you can then usually work forwards through the action or work backwards through the action until you can work out what it is that is going wrong and retracting from those revolutions or the direction of those revolutions on the ball.
There's generally a root cause, isn't there, Sam? You know,
yeah,
that you can take it back to, and I'd always look at, you know, I'd look at the release last, because personally, and I'm not saying this is for everybody, but my personal thing would be to look at the release last, because often when we track through, we find out something that's likely to impact negatively on the release point. Then you check the release to see whether it's relevant or not. That's my preference. But as all fast bowling coaches, spin bowling coaches, they will have a different set of sequencing that they go through, but that's the one that I found works personally for me. And there's always a root cause, so once you find out something that's not quite right, go backwards until you find out what the point is that probably impacted upon that initially.
For me, Gareth, I do it the same way, but when I illustrate it to a cricketer, so when I'm actually explaining it, I would explain it in reverse, if you know what I mean. So I'd explain it by the first shot would be the delivery, releasing from the hand, and I'd say, look, here's our issue, the ball's spinning in this direction, and let's go back from there and see why. So I would I'd do it the same way as you in identifying it, and then I'd explain it in reverse, as it were.
Yeah, cool, like it.
How involved, we're talking about a team where we've got obviously got a few spinners, and we've got one who has really cracked it and the other ones haven't. How involved would you get that player who's cracked it with helping the guys who haven't got their head around it yet?
It might depend on the age of the cricketers and the advancement of the cricketers, but why not? I mean, he may be able to come up with something and say, I was actually 6 weeks ago, I wasn't spilling it either. And maybe they've got an idea of something that they've tried out. I think getting boys to help each other or girls to help each other or whoever they're working with in the team is always a great idea. Involving each other in each other's progression, knowing each other inside out is one of the key things we try and highlight in our team that I work with at school, is knowing your teammates as well as you can. So when you're batting with them or bowling against them, you're also coaching them at the same time. So why not try and include someone in that decision if you can do?
Yeah, I think it's, I would use people, but I would use them in different ways depending on what the preference for learning was of the person that you're ultimately trying to make a positive impact upon. So with my visual learners and my kinesthetic learners, I will use the video footage of the person that's nailed it and point out certain bits that you're looking for that person to take on board. So for example, I worked this morning with a girl bowler and a boy bowler. The boy bowler plays for Wales, is on the Glamorgan EPP and is pretty quick. Yet the girl bowler who's on the Somerset EPP actually nailed one of the points on the back foot that and had done for the last few weeks. So I simply came to the lad in question, and he's a very much a visual learner. And I said, right, what do you see there that you'd like to take on board? And he went, right, that back foot position is absolutely magnificent. And then he was able to take that on and put it into a drill, admittedly at low momentum, but he got that in place in that drill. And then his next stage is to put that under a bit of pressure with momentum. But I could have probably said 1,000 words at that point and not necessarily have had the same impact as him watching some super slow motion footage of Emily doing her stuff in the session, which was fantastic.
Okay, food for thought for you, Craig. Let us know how you get on, and your team of spinners will be ripping it past the inside edge and the outside edge before you know it, hopefully.
Soapbox time here on the show. We've got the very precise and structured David up on there. He's got 2 steps to go. He's reached the top, and you've got a minute, mate.
Oh, I enjoyed the commentary at the beginning of that. That was excellent. What I want to talk about, though, is coaching and the way that you define yourself as a coach. This is an idea that, again, I got from a friend of the show, Stephen Jones, and he talks about not being a cricket coach anymore, but being a performance coach. And I like that as a way of taking a more holistic view of the way that you approach improving the cricket of players, because technique is one element, and that's traditionally the thing that we've talked about a lot when we talk about coaching cricket, and even tactics and that element are all important things that a coach needs to know about. But I think more and more these days you need to know about things like how strength and conditioning is an important part of a player's development, how psychology is an important part of the player's development, and how as a coach you can use those things to your advantage. You don't necessarily have to become an expert in those areas, but you do have to have the kind of knowledge that you've never had in the past about these things. Okay, let's wrap it up now, because I've got an appointment with some fish and chips, as I've just been telling the team offline there. But before we go, we've got a couple of things to decide. And one of those things is the winner of this week's competition. The prize is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. You can find out more by heading over to that website to get all the info about those courses. So we had Usman's question about bowling leg spin or not bowling leg spin, and we had Craig's question about coaching spinners. Which one did you prefer this week, Harris?
Well, I think Usman's question was both brilliant, but also showed incredible levels of maturity to be speaking in that way and wanting to move his game on and taking control of that situation, which for a 10-year-old is absolutely astounding and can only be applauded. So for that, well done, Usman, you've won this week's course.
Congratulations. And I've got to tell you, Gareth, Usman has sent that question in about 20 times. So he's stuck in there. He keeps asking it. We do have a lot of questions sent in, but I just had to reward him for sending that question in so many times over the last few weeks. I just had to get it on the show some way or another. So yeah, I kind of bumped him ahead of some other questions there. So well done, Usman. You've won the prize. You've reached your aim finally.
Well, as my 4-year-old would say, if you don't succeed at first, Daddy, try again. And he's done exactly that and reap the rewards. The
wisdom of babes. So, Gareth, if someone wanted to get in touch with the show, whether they were 10 or whether they were 100 and they had a question, what would they need to do?
Well, they could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
That's right. And if you get your question read out, it'll be answered and hopefully your problem will be solved. But also you get a chance to win that prize, the online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And if you don't get some great coaching advice from some of our excellent coaches there, then I don't know what we can do to help you, because those are the best people online that you can find. You can also get us through Twitter. Pitch Vision Acad is the account that I keep in touch with. Our Facebook, which is thriving with many, many thousands of people joining in the conversation every day, is facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. And you can subscribe, of course, to the show. You can use any podcatching program you like. iTunes is the one that most people use, I've noticed from our stats. And you can just do a search for Pitch Vision Academy and find us there. And if you don't want to use iTunes, you can use anything else you like by heading to pitchvision.com/academy and clicking on the podcast link for all the information. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Labus.
Cheers, boys.
Thanks, guys.